The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. If you've listened to the show for a while, you know there are three questions I ask all of my guests. I ask, what do you think is our largest cultural societal problem in America? And sometimes I sidebar to, do you think it's solvable? I ask, do you feel like you've made it? And then I ask my guests usually to end with their best tip for my listeners on how they can improve their lives. In the last few episodes, I've been talking about that last question. It's something I enjoy discussing. I like thinking about improving my life. I like taking steps to improve my life. I like hearing suggestions on how to improve my life. But now I want to get into that first question because I've obviously thought a lot about what I think is our largest cultural problem. And while my answer changes from time to time, I have one overarching one that I think is a huge issue for us. I call it bystanderism. It's when something bad is happening, everyone knows it's bad, and no one steps in. I've written about this a lot in the past. I wrote about it when there were various abuse scandals, the one in Penn State or the one with the Olympic gymnasts. I wrote one that stuck out to me about a flight attendant forcing someone to put their dog in the overhead compartment of an airplane and how the dog barked until it died and no one said a word. I'm not even a dog person. I'm allergic, okay? Don't kill me, dog people. And there's no way in the world that dog is going into the overhead compartment while I'm on that flight. There's just no way. And obviously the abuse scandals, I don't understand how so many people knew or suspected or had an inkling and didn't do or say anything. I just could never live with myself. I know I'm not perfect, but there's absolutely no way that I wouldn't get involved and step in. And I don't care how popular, you know, the people involved are or how highly regarded, it just really wouldn't matter to me. A few days ago, the mayor of San Jose, Matt Mahan, was being interviewed on the street when an unwell man attacked his security guy. The security guy and the man got into this altercation, fighting in the street. I mean, it looked so bizarre. While a bunch of people stood around and watched, filmed, called the police, whatever, I tweeted that it's not the crazed man that makes me afraid for our society, but all the men standing around doing nothing. I don't understand how that can be someone's reaction. There were a bunch of men. They could have taken that guy down easily, but they all stood around and watched. I talked about this on an episode with Jesse Kelly where we talked about how we want to raise the kinds of kids that will jump into the terrifying ocean to save their friend. And I admitted, like, I want my kids to be like that, but I would be so scared and I'd be like, please don't jump in, just save yourself. But that's very high stakes. A bunch of people subduing a guy on the street would be far lower stakes, and still no one did it. I get the arguments as to why that is. People point to Daniel Penny, who was a bystander on a New York City subway and ended up allegedly killing an aggressive homeless man. He's been arrested and may end up in prison for trying to save a train car full of people from this deranged guy. People got the lesson that stepping in could lead to problems. I get that. But here's the thing. I remember hearing about our insane litigious society in the 1980s and being warned that if someone falls down on the ground, don't help them up in case they sue you. This was a whole thing. But remember that last episode of Seinfeld? We used to know that being a bystander and not helping was, okay, maybe not an arrestable offense, but still pretty bad. That was 1998. And then heroes rushed into burning buildings to save people on 9/11. Firemen, police officers, yes, but also regular people. And then a few years later, I was living in New York for the blackout of 2003, and it was such a helpful time. 9/11 wasn't that long ago, and everyone wanted to be a hero. They were carrying groceries for the old lady in their building. They were checking in on people. It was really, really nice. Something has changed since then. And maybe it's our phones and social media. And believe me, sometimes I think that's our biggest societal problem. I mean, that's it, right? And that people answer that a lot on the show. But it seems like too fast a change for that to be the reason for this problem. I don't know how to fix this issue. In our house, we talk a lot and have for years about not being bystanders. You're expected to step in and help if you can. Yes, there's a risk. And something bad could happen, absolutely. But the alternative is living in the world where no one helps, and that's the worst outcome I could think of. Coming up next, an interview with Jimmy Failla. Join us after the break.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Jimmy Failla, host of Fox News Saturday Night, host of Fox Across America on Fox News Radio, and the author of the awesome book, Cancel Culture Dictionary, The A to Z Guide on Winning the War on Fun. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, Carol. This is kind of a big deal.
It really is.
me and you have this funny relationship where we've done TV together and Fox events and stuff like that. But you know how they always say, like, you never see two homeless guys hanging out on the same street corner because their energies kind of cancel each other out. Yeah. So like, you're the guy who plays the saxophone. I'm the guy who merengue dances with the doll on the subway. But here we are. We're on the same corner. This is getting nuts.
I feel like I'm going to rake in the cash. I don't know. You know.
No, my money's on you because my merengue has really gone downhill since I got the TV show.
We'll practice, whatever, you know. I loved your book. I think you are so funny and you're also just so fun. And you tackle serious stuff, obviously, but you're just always having a good time. And I think that you are winning the war on fun. So how did you get into the media world?
Well, this is a wild story. So I always wanted to do this. And I was driving, you know, a cab with ambitions of doing this. And I was doing stand up and trying to sell screenplays, which I can tell you all about, and auditioning for TV roles and everything in between. But my actual Fox entry, the point of entry was Kennedy. One night, her booker saw me at the Gotham Comedy Club down on 23rd and 7th and invited me to come on Kennedy's first show. So the first time I was here at Fox, like I've told the story a bunch, like I literally had a taxi double parked outside of this building on 6th Avenue. This is important, okay? Trunk open, hazards on, because that makes the cops think you're running inside to get something.
You're going
to
be right back.
So that's how I bought my way out of a parking ticket. And I did a hit on Kennedy and got back into my cab and drove people around. Bizarre.
I love it.
That was the way in, as I started appearing on her show. And then within a few years, I got to write for her show, and that kind of snowballed into radio. And then with the help of some low-level extortion, radio became TV. And here we are.
You're the best-dressed man on TV, so it makes sense.
I've kind of like, for the pod, I dialed it in. I try to look like a civilian, and I don't actually dip into my cry for help collection that you might see me wearing in prime time. But a note on that, Greg Gutfeld, my stablemate, who makes fun of my clothes a lot, only resents them because they don't come in kid sizes. Okay. If you could get my jackets as part of the Peter Dinklage collection, Gutfeld would rock them. He likes loud sweaters. But anyway, it's good to be here.
It's good to have you. So do you feel like you've made it?
So this is weird. I would think on paper, absolutely. But I think something that gets you from driving a taxi 84 hours a week to here is like, I almost call it like there's like this abusive stage dad that lives in your head, Carol, that just keeps yelling at you until the second you go on stage. And the reason I'm making this point is like, it really is. I have like a Joe Jackson, like Michael Jackson's dad, just yells at me all day. And then right before I'm about to go on the TV set, he's like, "You look good, Michael." And I'm like, "Really?" And I get so excited and I go do a pretty good job. But when that's over, okay, your stage dad, just because the arenas get bigger, you know, and maybe the wardrobe gets fancier, your stage dad doesn't dial back the beat down. Right. So I don't know that I walk around thinking I made it. I think my friends do. I think my family does. And I think for me, like, what should have been the moment, like when they for like a month when my show launched, they had me on the Marriott Marquis in Times Square, billboard in Times Square. But you know, this is like a New Yorker. You don't take a billboard seriously unless someone drew X-rated graffiti on the face. So it's like, to me, it just looked like a bad Photoshop. Like I couldn't even give myself the win. I'm like, does anyone ever stop me?
You couldn't hire anybody to like get up there and like put a
Sharpie, make this real for me.
Draw some like penises on it. No,
thank you, America. Yeah. Thank you. Is what you're trying to say.
But just to be clear, there isn't actually a stage dad with a switch beating Jimmy behind the scenes. This is you do this to yourself.
Yeah, no, straight up. I mean, there's a guy I pay on Craigslist, but that's not who I'm quoting. I'm kidding. That's not who I'm quoting here.
So in your book, Cancel Culture Dictionary, you talk about Hollywood and how they alienate half the country regularly. Mm-hmm. Why do they do this? Do they hate money?
I actually think they do it because they believe it might lead to more money. Mm-hmm. Meaning if they, you know, carry the views of the elites in Hollywood, they'll be more likely to be cast by them and maybe be a part of the in crowd. Like, I'll give you two quick examples. Like Jimmy Kimmel, who obviously is hosting the Oscars, so he's as far up as he could go. But part of the reason he's there is because he's essentially paying protection money to the woke mob for all of the things he did early in his career.
Right.
Whether it was the man show or all the blackface he wore when he was doing his Karl Malone sketches. You know, if he didn't align with their political views, Jimmy Kimmel would be unemployed for like 10 years.
Right. He's just not even that funny. So
no, not well. You know what I mean? I believe this, Carol. Like he's there. Those guys, he's capable. I don't believe Colbert is capable. Like Colbert is as funny as an orphanage on fire on Christmas Day with no survivors. Which, to be clear, is not funny. Okay,
not funny. I'm not laughing.
I'm condoning that humor. Mm-hmm. But Colbert is terrible. I believe Kimmel would be capable, except he's doing this thing that we saw Alec Baldwin do on SNL when he tried to be a Trump impersonator.
Mm-hmm.
He's showing the audience that it clearly comes from a place of malice.
Right.
And comedy doesn't work if it looks like it's truly mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. Like, mean-spirited jokes work, but they work because they look like they're being done from a place of love.
Right.
If you start telling that joke with, like, a scowl, like, Alec Baldwin's Trump impression was more offensive than anything Trump has ever said in real life. And Trump's, you know, he's throwing some wild pitches.
Yeah, he's had one or two. Yeah.
Give him that. But the Baldwin thing was terrible. The Kimmel thing was terrible. So, what about Hollywood? There was this manufactured hysteria around Trump when he entered politics. I say manufactured hysteria because all of his biggest critics who said, like, he's an existential threat, we're all going to die, were people who had spent the previous 30 years working with him.
Right.
Like, for NBC to open SNL by crying when he won the election and having Kate McKinnon play Hollywood.
That was a good episode.
I was great for the wrong reason. But right. I'm like, SNL, he had hosted that show twice.
Mm-hmm.
And this is happening on NBC, a network that is still paying him royalties to this day.
Yep.
Celebrity Apprentice, which he hosted for 15 years. So it was manufactured in the sense that Hollywood bought into this. And I think everyone thought they had to outsell each other when it came to their outrage or their fear. And right. I think that's where Hollywood blew this in terms of the Oscars and alienating half the country.
Do you remember when during the height of the Me Too thing, Russell Simmons got, you know, caught up in something, somebody accused him of something. And he literally said, okay, it's going to be okay. I'm going to build an anti-NRA, anti-Trump, like, you know, outlet. That is what I'm going to do to repent for this. So they really do see it as I could do bad things, but as long as I'm on the right political side, everything will be okay.
So those are the two motivating factors. Okay. The protection money that guys pay if they're Jimmy Kimmel.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that a lot of actors, I mean it, I know a lot of them, they are stupid. And what I mean by that is, you know, Hollywood actors are famous, as you know. I mentioned this in the book because they hit the genetic lottery.
Right.
You know, and if you are an A-list elite actor, you are so good looking, as I say, that the rest of us are willing to pay $30 for a popcorn to watch you recite the words that were written by an ugly person.
Right.
Okay. That is Hollywood. That's so attractive. You think about Matthew McConaughey, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
He's so gorgeous. They're putting him in a Cadillac with no script to just talk to himself and drive around the woods.
Yep.
And it sells cars because he's that hot, you know, and that's why they should almost stay in their lane. Because they offer us an off-ramp in their lane that gets us away from politics, gets us away from division.
Yeah.
And that's my frustration with Hollywood and the arts going political.
Can you see yourself doing something in Hollywood? Because I could totally see you doing something in Hollywood despite your wrong views.
I mean, Hollywood, Florida.
Hey, we would welcome you open arms to Florida.
The Hard Rock Casino there.
Yeah. It's really nice.
Down there. I grew up with dreams of being a part of the Hollywood that was like a hang.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a we have the answers in life. We're going to coach you through a pandemic. It was just like, hey, come see my movie.
Yeah.
Here's me chain smoking on Johnny Carson's show promoting my movie. You know, and that's what Hollywood used to be is like, we had always shaken hands on this deal that they had better lives than us. And we didn't resent them for it because we knew some people were just gifted in ways the rest of us weren't. And we were just thankful to vicariously live through their pursuits a few nights a year on TV or at a premiere or at an award show. And if I could be a part of that Hollywood, I would do it in a second. Are you kidding me? And that's the thing. It's like, Carol, most of the people giving you a speech about inequality are so rich, they're using people as furniture. They're actually like sitting on families as couches.
Yeah.
And it's like, they get up to the mic and they're like, no, we know it's hard. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't.
Right. There was that story also a few years ago where Hollywood celebrities had, during the big wildfires, they evacuated their homes, but forgot to tell their like cleaning people that were coming to work, their house staff, they failed to mention it. So these people like, you know, went around the fires to get into these communities, only to find that everybody had left. That's how I see Hollywood pretty much.
Not a lot of self-awareness is the best way I would say it.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the Carol Markowitz Show.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a summer night in Paris, American artist Lee Krasner is drifting off to sleep when the phone rings. On the line, news that her husband, Jackson, is dead. Jackson, as in the painter Jackson Pollock. He might, to this day, be the most mythologized figure in American art. But how much of the story that we've been told about him is just that? A myth. On Death of an Artist, Season 2, Krasner and Pollock, the story about how the art world changed forever. And the story of the artist who reset the market for American abstract painting. Just maybe not the one you're thinking of. Listen to Death of an Artist, Krasner and Pollock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So what would you say is our biggest societal problem, like outside of, you know, Hollywood being the worst?
I just think we're too connected. I think, honestly, I think the biggest challenge facing civilization is social media. And I say that because there is a very positive upside to social media. It is entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, people do find great joy in using it when they're, you know, looking at songs they like or jokes they find funny. But because our disagreements never separate anymore, it's like we all grew up fighting around the same issues we're mm-hmm. fighting around today. It's just the way we fight about them is different. Meaning you might disagree with a guy at a family function and then not see him for 2 months. But now you disagree with him at the family function and he's in your pocket on the way home in your
right.
phone spouting mm-hmm. off about, let me tell you what this fool said. And now you're like, oh yeah. And now the fight goes on. And I don't, that's the problem is that I don't think that we can't coexist anymore. I just think we're being asked to do it too much.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if I was president, can happen. There's a background check.
Right.
But if I was president, I would declare, like, I'd sell the idea of, like, a social media moratorium. Because mm-hmm. I think if we ever, like, once we got on, Carol, we've never been off. We haven't been off for a day of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Not a national tragedy, a global disaster. We've never had a day off.
Right.
But I think if we collectively took a week off, we'd come back that Monday, pick up where we left off, and realize how unnecessary 99% of what we're doing is. You know, if you 20 years ago would have taken a picture of your dinner and showed it to a group of people, it would have put you in a home. Carol, that's how it would have ended.
I still think we should.
No, I dig it. But if you showed people 20 years ago a picture of your lasagna, they would have put you in a home and went out for lasagna. So it's not to say the dinner picture doesn't influence people. It does.
Right.
We're in this weird vortex where we don't keep up with the Kardashians. Like, we are all our own Kardashians. Yeah. Every one of us is our own Kardashian now.
Absolutely. And I'm super influenced because, like, during the 2016 election where they talked about taco trucks all the time, I would just have tacos constantly because was just in the news. It was like Hillary Clinton talking about the taco trucks and Donald Trump having his taco bowls. Like, I mean, how wasn't that really a commercial for tacos?
But that's where social media, no, you're right. But that's where social media transformed politics, because something Trump knows, and it does play heavily to his favor, is you're not running for president anymore. You are running for class president.
Yes.
And it's different. You're running in a high school election now. Even though the issues are serious, there's such an effort being put into making the campaign cool. On Trump's end, it's him. He tweets, he does what he says, he has his nutty moments, and he's Trump, and people like it. And they like the lack of a filter. On the Biden end, you can see there's 50 political strategists calculating everything and pre-approving every statement. But nonetheless, they are engaged in the same thing.
That's so wise. Like, really, the class president thing, that is so smart. I mean, did you come up with that yourself? That's amazing.
Oh, my God, man. This is all I got. I mean, it also makes sense. You're over-complimenting it. I mean this.
No, it's really good.
No, but my analogies also peak at my level of education. You'll notice I didn't say, this is like when you're trying to be the resident administrator in a dorm, because I didn't go to one.
Right. So you're amazing. You're so funny. Your book, Cancel Culture Dictionary, is fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. End here with a tip for my listeners on how they can improve their lives. How can they be happy like you?
Honestly, you got to have perspective. That's the trick. And most people, you know, life has a way of denying it to you because we live very moment to moment now. Everybody's kind of a prisoner of the moment, in that the omnipotence of the news force and your social media feed often makes us feel like the moment you're living in is the only one they'll ever be. But if you can think beyond the blast of that fire hose we're consuming news through, you can probably find a lot of fun that's not related to the things that bother you. I don't mean to get deep, but like when I was a cab driver.
Get deep, yeah.
When I was a cab driver, I really was driving a cab 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day and doing stand-up every night because I really wanted to do what I'm doing now. But knowing it was like beating me down, a woman in my cab told me one day, your problem is like, your alarm clock represents the wrong thing to you. And I was like, what does that actually mean? And she's like, whatever you do, okay, that sucks. He's like, no matter how much you think it sucks to get up an hour earlier, if you get up an hour earlier and your eyes open to this thing you are psyched to do, okay, you suddenly see this whole new meaning to your alarm clock. And that's how I got arrested for fondling myself on the stuff. I'm kidding. But the theory of your alarm clock needs to represent joy.
Right.
And she said, and honestly, she said, if you just take your day, and there's going to be a lot of things you don't want to do, but you just set mile markers of fun through your day, you're kind of calibrated to go look for the good time instead of the bad time. And that's my argument against cancel culture, is it's taking sources of joy and training people to police them for grievance. Hey, is this cast diverse enough? Is that joke punching up instead of punching down? The point is, if the joke's funny, it's funny. If the movie's good, it's good. Do what you want with the cast. Do what you want with the punchline. But because we got to this place where we were rewarding grievance, a lot of people broke their fun compass. Because they're like, I'm going to go towards the anger because you get likes for saying you're mad at Dave Chappelle. But I promise me, even if you don't like all of Chappelle's jokes, you'll get a more rewarding life out of laughing at the ones you do than picketing outside the theater for the ones you don't. Because that's the punchline to the whole thing, Carol, is cancel culture has always existed before there was social media. Like, we had people who went to comedy clubs and got mad. We just didn't call them cancel culture. We called them losers. Okay? And that's all that ever was. So if you go looking for the fun and you defund the fun police, which is what they are, you probably might wind up with my disposition. That's all I'm doing differently than anybody else, is I've just calibrated to look for the good time.
I love it. He is Jimmy Failla. He is amazing. His book is Cancel Culture Dictionary, The A to Z Guide on Winning the War on Fun. Buy it Watch his show on Saturday nights and listen to him on Fox News Radio. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
I miss you already, Carol.
I miss you too. Let's hang out.
This is a great street corner.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters. Every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.